You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
You've got me for 2 hours in the morning. You have the option of an extra three today. 5 hours live radio for me, solo, coming up to celebrate this Friday. This program, Writer Than You. And then, again, filling in for Jim Rome at the Jim Rome Studios here in Southern California from noon to 3 Eastern time, 9 a.m. to noon Pacific time. A lot of great stuff to get into. We're going to try, I'm going to try to properly honor Albert Pujols. And Tom Verducci had an amazing piece on this in Sports Illustrated. I'm probably going to read you a little bit of that. We love to tear down our greats. And it's not impossible, but certainly hard for all-timers to play like all-timers at the end of their careers. Tom Brady's of the world are the exception. And also that story hasn't, that ending has not been written yet. But Pujols deserves to be remembered, whatever becomes of his career, retirement, or he decides to take his, and they are, paltry talents at this point, somewhere else, to be remembered the way that he should. We're going to do that in the program. Anthony Davis, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine who's a Lakers fan and works sort of on the periphery, I suppose, of that Lakers organization, and in just casual conversation, I think over a beer, made the point that there were a bunch of Humpty Dumpties around the NBA. And I said Anthony Davis was one of them. And I think he spit up his very fancy, I don't know what he was drinking, some kind of sour, I think, which was maybe his first problem, and began to argue, this was a few months, Anthony Davis is not a Humpty Dumpty. Well, a piece has fallen off in the Kings men here in L.A. trying to put him back together again. Anthony Davis' injury is another blinking warning sign for the Lakers. And the reality, I think the West is wide open. We'll hit that in the program. We'll get into the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know if there's ever been an organization of remarkable stars who have obviously come up with a secret pact to spend the year doing a Joaquin Phoenix and just pretending they're this unlikable as some sort of, I guess, Netflix documentary that's going to come out a year from now called We Gotcha, We're Not Really This Bad. I don't know. We're going to see. But for now, I just got to roll with it like it's real. We'll do that an hour from now. James Harden. We got this. We'll play this quote an hour. We got this rare thing called talent. You do, huh? You're the only one? Cool. Tell that to LeBron and you know what? Yeah, we'll do it later. Cool. That's great. That's great, James. That's great. Bum of the Week is coming up, and in related news, James Harden's nominated. I'm sure Tony La Russa will be nominated. Let's do this. Every week, we crown someone who has really epitomized bumdom in the sports world. Want your nominations. Few ways you can do that. You can send them to me on Twitter, although I'm not really looking at my tweet. Whenever I fill in for Jim on the Jim Rome Show, I just don't look at my mentions until the shows are over because there are so many angry people that I want to respond to everybody. I just like, I'll do it when it's done. I'll do it when I've got, you know, I guess a sour. Is that what I'm supposed to drink now that I live in LA? In my hand. So maybe send them to Tom DiBenedetto, the executive producer, producer_Tom, and maybe use sports writer, sports R-E-I-T-E-R, to yell at me. Because that's a really healthy way to use social media. It's really helped the world the last few years. You can just continue it in your sports world. You can also just call in. If you want to nominate somebody for Bum of the Week, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. But we're going to start where really we've started sports talk and just the general current of the gravity, the pull of the sports world going back to the draft. And that is the, you know, as Aaron Rodgers turns, the new and remarkable soap opera involving the Packers quarterback. And something interesting happened in the last 24 hours. And we got to try to figure out what it means. And that is that Aaron Rodgers has gone from, you know, over the course of the last week or so, being reportedly and widely and accurately reportedly disgruntled, to reportedly wanting the GM fired, to reportedly calling that GM Jerry Krause on text strings with teammates, to threatening the idea of retirement, to now, it seems to me, and this is what's the new reality, the latest, sending out the surrogates to have a perspective, have an opinion, sort of shape the conversation a little bit. And some of that happened actually on the Jim Rome Show yesterday. We'll start with James Jones, was on NFL Network. And you know, former wide receiver, of the Green Bay Packers. It's a confidant of Aaron Rodgers. I'm not calling the man a liar. I don't think that at all. I'm just saying it sounds to me like James Jones here is being told a message from Aaron Rodgers that he wants you to hear, and we'll oblige him. Here it is.
When the organization side of it comes into place and you talk about, you know, him and the GM and the head coach working together, I think it's fixable. I think they'll be able to get that stuff done. But I think that's what it's about. It's not about getting the GM fired. It's not about new contract. It's all about making sure that you're putting the team in the best situation to win some championships.
Oh, it's not about getting the GM fired. The GM leaked that, huh? Is that what happened? The GM called up, you know, some report. Look, here's the deal. Don't tell anybody it was me, but if we do this together, you can get me fired and ruin my career. What do you think? Does that work for you? It works for me? All right. Sounds great. I mean, come on. Get out of here. Aaron Rodgers has every right to try and get anybody fired if he wants to. He wants to take out his GM. That's fine. But we don't have to fall for every puppet master move the guy makes. I'm not buying it. And this is widespread. A.J. Hawk, who's also a friend of Aaron Rodgers, who's been on this show a lot, but he's an actual friend of Aaron Rodgers, went to the Kentucky Derby with Rodgers. I'm just going to read you the quote. Quote, this isn't one thing. Like, one thing didn't just all of a sudden happen, and Aaron, I don't think, wanted this public anyway. All right, let's just stop it there. Again, I don't think that the Packers brass are the ones pushing the narrative and pushing the idea that Aaron Rodgers wants them all fired. Because in that battle, the best case outcome is those guys in that front office are tarnished but survive. But a very realistic outcome is that they're fired and they don't have the job they spent careers working toward. Unless Aaron Rodgers' insurance agent that he got rid of, right? Wasn't that one of the deals? Like he switched his insurance agent for another agent? Unless that guy leaked the story, it comes from the Aaron Rodgers camp. AJ Hawk goes on. So we're in a weird spot right now. I love the we. Are we? So we're in a weird spot right now. The Packers are in a very tough spot, and Aaron as well, so I'm hopeful that something can happen. And yet, AJ Hawk went on to say he thinks Aaron Rodgers is going to be there. And look, Brady Papinga's a friend of mine, and I want to be clear. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is calling up his buddies and saying, here's what we're going to do. Hawk, Papinga, my guy James Jones, I'm going to leak this. Aaron Rodgers is a smart dude. Every single athlete of that level of power, of influence, who feel the world bending a little bit, right, to their will, just by their mere presence. This is true for LeBron James. This is true for Aaron Rodgers. It's now true for Patrick Mahomes. It's true for Tom Brady. They understand and they learn to wield their power in very real ways. And I tell you this as someone, mostly on the NBA side, but the NFL side too, I have been on the receiving end of this kind of manipulation, on this kind of the reality that people that are so much more important than you do recognize, spend all their time telling people publicly that you have no value, while behind the scenes, when they need you, courting you because there actually is some limited value. And I can't say who these people are because source confidentiality is real, but I have criticized a lot of people in my career with utter 100%, let's call it 99% accuracy. The only thing that people like less than being criticized is being criticized accurately when they feel like they've sort of covered that. When they feel like they've sort of dominated or charmed or coerced or intimidated their local press corps. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but A, the show is called Righter Than You, and B, for all my faults, I'm going to say what I think and I'm going to say what's real. And you would be surprised, some of the people that I've gone after or still go after, reaching out through surrogates, right? But reaching out, trying to make amends. And I'm not that important. I'm not Adam Schefter. I'm not Adrian Wojnarowski. I'm not the local beat writer whose opinion might really matter in that market. It's not about I matter. It's about if they're going to take the time with me, they're going to certainly take the time with other people. And Aaron Rodgers knows this. And my point before I play this Brady Papinga clip from the Jim Rome show yesterday is that Aaron Rodgers is smart enough to be able to operate on a lot of levels as his own marketing guy, as his own spinster, as his own, you know, James Carville back in the day. So you call up, you hang out with AJ Hawk, you talk to James Jones, and James said in that, I talk to Aaron every week. Aaron also knows that in talking to these guys, guys that host radio shows that, you know, maybe used to be teammates, guys that are on NFL Network that used to be teammates, guys that, in AJ Hawk's case, do a podcast and are on a frequent level, frequently on the rotation of guests. Aaron Rodgers knows that he gives them power by having a connection to him. And if he just says to these guys, blah, 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 here's what I'm thinking, and they say, oh, I'll keep it to myself. And Aaron's like, you know, I don't care, man. Like, I got nothing to hide. He can manipulate those guys, too. And I don't mean that in a nefarious way. He just can. And that's what I was thinking yesterday when on the Jim Rome show, I asked Brady Papinga the odds Aaron Rodgers would be the quarterback for the Packers week one of this upcoming season.
I mean, it's 50-50. You know, I mean, the reality is he's a man of principle. He's going to stick his heels into the ground based off of what's happened. And the Packers are equally as strong in terms of acting according to principle, which is somewhat part of the reason why, you know, they're at a standstill right now. So I don't see Aaron playing for any other team. I'll say that because I don't think the Packers would even let him do that. I believe that they would just have him not play. But, you know, it's early. We're in May here. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that could change, you know, but I don't see him playing on any other team.
50-50, huh? That is a big walk back. Here's what's going on. Aaron Rodgers is doing one of two things. Either he's walking it back slowly but surely. He's playing the old. And this is the thing that drives me, because I used to be a political reporter. And so one of the things that drives me crazy about political reporting today is that the same politicians who say reporters are liars are the ones who leak the most often. That's 100% accurate. The press are liars. The press makes stuff up. Thank you. I'm now going to text three people at the New York Times and people at the Washington Post and leak stories internally. And the same can be true certainly in sports. And you saw this with, and look, I like Mike Florio. To the degree that I know him, to the degree that I've interacted with him, I think he's a pro. I think he has carved for himself an incredibly impressive brand. I think he is a really impressive dude. So is Adam Schefter. And so the Florio on Schefter crime here, violence in the media sphere, in the Twitter sphere, I think is worth parsing a little bit for a couple of reasons. If you missed this, Pro Football Talk, Florio today reported or pointed out that Schefter said in his reporting, both in his ESPN.com article and in Twitter on the day of the draft, when that happened last week, Aaron Rodgers basically wants out, sources told ESPN Thursday. And then on a radio show, Mr. Schefter said, you know, it's an accumulation of things. Aha! Florio wrote, we got him! Thought it was an accumulation. Oh, it's an accumulation? Thought it was Thursday. Which is it? Maybe it didn't come from Rodgers. Maybe he had it all along. Okay, two things. One, the implication being that the report's not true. Other NFL teams literally, before the report, reached out to see if Aaron Rodgers was available, and in part because of the report. Other NFL teams, including the Niners, tried to trade for Aaron Rodgers. That makes it pretty real. And you don't have to take my word for it. I'm not going to give you some anonymous source. I'm just going to let you listen to John Lynch, the Niners GM, tell you that they went out and tried to get Aaron Rodgers.
You're talking about, the MVP of our league last year. And I don't know about you guys, but to me, when the MVP of the league might be available, and I didn't know that, I'm just reading the tea leaves just like everybody else and saying, hold on, is something going on here? Yeah, we inquired, and it was a quick into the conversation. It wasn't happening.
Here's the point. With all respect to Florio, don't believe Florio when the implication from his article, accurate though, right? Like, interesting point, might be this report isn't real. It's real. With all respect to Brady Papinga, who is a friend of mine and did me a great service and was very gracious coming on the Jim Rome show yesterday, and I love Brady, I don't believe him. Because you're going to believe your friends, he's going to believe Aaron Rodgers, but I don't believe Aaron Rodgers, and that's who's speaking through Brady, that it's 50-50. And that things have been a little misreported. I don't believe AJ Hawk, and I like the guy. I don't believe James Jones. I don't know the guy at all. Aaron Rodgers is messing with you and me and the Packers. He's exerting power. He's showcasing to Green Bay. He can absolutely shape the narrative, and if he wants to be the good guy in exit, he can be the good guy in exit. And let me make this last point as well. Florio felt comfortable, and I've done it too, so it's fine, pulling back the curtain a little bit on how reporting works and making the case that Schefter was full of it or got manipulated, right? That's kind of the implication. Knowing Florio full well that being manipulated is part of the devil's bargain you make when you report for a living. These guys aren't talking to you because they think you're swell or they heard you got to hang out with Garrett Ritt at the chocolate fountain at the Jim Rome show. They're hanging out, they're talking to you because they want something from you. They do. And the irony is Florio's assessment of Schefter's reporting and the possibility Schefter got played is probably true, but it's also ironic because Florio's almost certainly getting played himself, because I would imagine the timing of that, that Florio came to this conclusion at the exact same time that Aaron Rodgers unleashed the surrogates, is not a coincidence. That someone in the Aaron Rodgers camp probably pointed it out. Aaron Rodgers, it's a guess, right? I don't know. But I would bet dollars to donuts. I would bet at least Ritt's money and maybe Tom DiBenedetto's money that Aaron Rodgers and his the people around him, leaked all of this stuff to the Packers, created the scenario he wants, and then to take the pressure off himself, you know, leaked, suggested to Florio, Schefter got it wrong. He's probably playing both sides. Probably leaking to Schefter, and then a week later, making Schefter look bad to make himself look good. That's how these things work in politics and how they work in sports. That's how they work. I've covered billionaire owners. I've covered LeBron James. I've covered Chris Paul. I've sat down with Steve Ballmer. I've sat down with Clark Hunt. I won't go through the whole list. The commonality at that level of income and sophistication and brand management is that it is not that different when I was a young reporter than trying to cover Bill Clinton as president and post-president in terms of the sophistication with which those operations operate. Aaron Rodgers, nothing's changed other than Aaron Rodgers is just in phase two or phase three of his plan. All right, 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. Producer underscore Tom is Tom's handle. If you want to do some Bum of the Week nominations, sports writer is mine, sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Want to give Albert Pujols a little bit of love and just, you know, I'll defer. One of the great baseball writers of all time wrote something really beautiful on him in Sports Illustrated. Just a quick moment to honor Pujols the right way as his career comes to the end, the way that most careers come to an end in sports. Without a lot of glory and without a lot of beauty, we'll do that next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
What's going on? Bill Ryder with you. I love puns too. If Garrett Ritt worked on this show, what would be the pun using his name? Writ large, maybe? Just, he makes bold pronouncements. It's not bad, right? Yeah, I got a double thumbs up from DiBenedetto over here. I've never had a producer at Board Op who didn't have a pun-themed segment in the show. We've got It Depends with Tom over here. What's Stewing with Stuart Kovacs. Get a Klug with Adam Klug. What to Sell for Tom DeCelestino, which is great because Tom, who's amazing and helps out on the Jim Rome show, has some of the best radio instincts in the country and some of the worst NBA takes. And it comes together in the magic that is the segment What to Sell. Bum of the week. Bum of the week in an hour. We'll do a little yin and yang an hour from now. We're gonna juxtapose. We're gonna have a little balance in the universe. We'll have the bum of the week. We're also gonna come to the defense of Nikola Jokic, the Denver Nugget, who's going to be the MVP. I started last night to really dive into what I'm sure is the obvious, but just to really look at the data and the numbers and start to reach out to people. And there is no contest for the number one spot. And some folks out there, including a person I know, is trying to make the case he'll be the worst MVP in, you know, whatever history. That's, what's the word I'm looking for? Dumb. It's a dumb take. And we're gonna bring this thing called facts to the conversation about an hour from now. We'll get into Anthony Davis and his injury yesterday. He really is Humpty Dumpty. I mean, I love the term, but just the point of Humpty Dumpty is he fell off a wall and he broke into a lot of pieces. It wasn't like one big piece that came undone. It was a bunch, right? King's men, Genie Bus's men, whatever, couldn't put them back together again. And I'm not trying to make fun of someone getting hurt, but you're gonna leave. These are big games for the Lakers, right? Second part of a back-to-back tonight against the Trailblazers. And the winner of that game will have the tiebreaker between Portland and the Lakers. And that could decide who's the sixth seed, you know, get to play in the best of seven series. And who's the seventh seed, you know, probably going to play the Warriors in a play-in situation. It's a big game. And Anthony Davis got hurt pretty early on. Lakers got just destroyed by the Clippers. And grabbed his ankle. Grabbed his ankle. And then told us out of the game it's back spasms. That's awful, and I feel bad for the guy, but that's sort of a Humpty Dumpty thing, right? Like, I fell, and there's a lot of different pieces that are, how's your ankle? Oh, my ankle's fine. It's the other piece. So the Kings men can't put that one back together again. This is a real concern for L.A. And while L.A. could get healthy and be the easy favorite, and while the Nets could get healthy and just get, you know, act healthy as a group and be the easy favorites in the East, and they are the betting favorites, I think it's more likely that the East and the West are something between wide open and highly competitive. We'll get to that later in the program. I'm a Cubs fan. I'm a Bears fan, too. I pride myself, and I think it's actually professional training. This wasn't always true. But I pride myself on being honest. And that's not just in the criticism of the people that need to be criticized across the sports that we talk about here. It's also in praise of people that I may not like personally, and that, or I may not like emotionally. And for me, this transition began because I went to the University of Missouri. I started my career in Little Rock in Des Moines, Iowa, not as a sports writer. I wrote sports stories, but politics and you know, some more serious and some darker things in sports. So I was like all in on Mizzou. And when I got my first full-time sports job at the Kansas City Star many years ago, I was a pretty big Missouri fan. And it's hard to overstate the degree to which Missouri fans hate Kansas fans, and the reverse is true. Literally, Norm Stewart, the longtime Mizzou coach, would refuse to get gasoline in Kansas. In Kansas City, where my kids were born, where I lived for a long time, is Kansas City. The Kansas City you're mostly thinking of is Kansas City, Missouri. But there's a Kansas City, Kansas, and there's suburbs that cross both sides. If you work in Kansas City, in downtown Kansas City, you might live in Missouri, you might live in Kansas. They're the same thing, basically. But not to Missouri fans. They would literally stop the bus on one side of the border to buy gas. Like, that's going to, like, you're going to win the old Jayhawker War that goes back to the, you know, Civil War by spending your $51 on the right side of the border. But I bought into that. And then I had to write about Kansas, and I met Bill Self, and he's just a good dude. Bill Self is a cool guy, is a nice guy. And I like him. And I found myself in that championship game where they came back against Memphis rooting for Kansas. And I remember texting some Missouri fans, friends, and one of them didn't talk to me for months, like literally. And my point is this. I'm not naturally inclined to vote for Chris Paul, you would think, right, on my MVP ballot. I'm almost certainly going to. I can separate my personal interactions with Chris Paul, and more to the point, my willingness to talk about them. My interactions with Chris Paul aren't unique to me. What's unique is that I'll talk about them, where other NBA writers won't do that. It doesn't change the fact that guy's a ridiculous talent, and I think he's incredibly valuable, maybe one of the five most valuable guys in the NBA. And if you didn't know me, or if I wasn't sort of built this way based on my career or personality, it'd be hard for me to praise Albert Pujols as a Cubs fan. What, he went two World Series there, I think three MVPs, and hit 420, I think it's 425 home runs in his time. Think about that. That guy hit 425 home runs with the Cardinals before signing a very long lucrative deal with the Angels here in Southern California. And the reality is, it's been a long time since he's been good, at least since he's been great. Here's a fun fact that I saw today over at Axios Sports. In Pujols' first year with the Angels coincided with Mike Trout's rookie year. Mike Trout's WAR that year, his wins against replacement, Mike Trout's rookie season was 10.6, okay? Pujols' WAR over his entire time with the Angels was 12. Trout had basically almost as much of an impact, positive, on the Angels in his rookie year as Pujols over the course of an entire $250, $60, $40 million contract. Hasn't played well at that level for a long time. And yet, he is, outside of, ironically, Mike Trout, I said the other day, who's the best hitter in baseball the last 20 or 30 years who's not Mike Trout? I said this on the Jim Rome Show and didn't answer the question. I think the answer might be Albert Pujols. Ricky Henderson did not have a particularly suave exit from professional sports. It was ugly. And I can go down the list. There's a lot of players for whom that is true. And it may be true for Tom Brady. Tom Brady's the exception to the rule, right? I actually wrote down, not everyone's Tom Brady. But Tom Brady hasn't exited the sport yet. There's no guarantee he's going to leave at the top of his game. Michael Jordan left at the top of the game twice. And still the lasting memory, if you believe in this glass half full approach, would be the Wizards. But that's not the reality. I'm just going to read you Tom Verducci, who I don't know. I don't think I've ever interviewed or met Verducci. He's just amazingly talented. And like a lot of people who transcend into radio and TV, right? Like he's a brand. He's a big deal. He was first and foremost a writer, and I love his writing. Quote, this is from Sports Illustrated, Tom Verducci. The end of greatness is often so horrid as to invoke pathos. I don't know how to say that word. He's too smart for me. But here is what is important about the inglorious exits. They are not important. Who contemplates the arc of Griffey's swing, the power of Schmidt's bat, or the impact of Ruth on American culture, and goes straight to how the sweetness ended? No one. So it will be with Pujols. That is awesome. That is beautiful. And that says it all. So whether Pujols retires or he goes to one of the teams people have been, you know, maybe he'll go to the White Sox. The Yankees has been mentioned as a landing destination. The Cardinals as more of a nostalgic. There's not really a place for him. And it clearly makes a lot more sense for Albert Pujols, if he wants to keep playing, who's sitting below the Mendoza line, to play on an American League team, because and a team that has a DH spot that's available and maybe be that leader in the clubhouse. Doesn't matter. Verducci's right. Nothing is going, in the long run, to overshadow the sweetness of what he accomplished. And he deserves some praise. And so we gave it to him here on the show. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Andrew Bogish is here. Not wearing the Mets shirt he had yesterday, but he does have, I'm told from Andrew, I don't know the details. Let me read this here. The greatest update ever done. So this is exciting. Let's just do it.
And I don't remember writing that, but we'll see what happens. The Angels are divorcing Albert Pujols in the final months of their 10-year, $240 million marriage. Pujols will hit the open market in a few days after he clears waivers. He wants to keep playing, but options are limited, especially with him hitting 198. The Angels say the move allows Jared Walsh to play first base full-time and Shohei Ohtani to DH as much as possible. After the announcement, the Angels lost again.
Phillips swings and sends one in the air towards right, towards the corner, giving chase Ward, and this one gets down for a base hit. Wendell scores, Zunino third being waved. The throw to the plate is on the way, and Zunino slides in safely. It's a two-run double for Brent Phillips, and the Rays have
courtesy
blown it open.
Courtesy of Rays Radio, Brent Phillips' two-run double capping a seven-run eighth for an 8-3 win in Anaheim. The Angels have now dropped five in a row. Tampa Bay has won five in a row. The only other night game yesterday was the Marlins' 3-1 home win over the D-backs. That's a three-game sweep from Miami. The NFLPA responding strongly to the NFL using Broncos right tackle Juwan James' torn Achilles to get players back to team facilities. The union called the move gutless and a scare tactic. James might lose his $10 million salary for the coming season because he got hurt off-site. Colts defensive end Kwity Paye is the first rounder to sign his contract this time around. He has a $2.4 million cap hit for the coming season. Bill, I'll beat you to the Nets. 113-109 losers in Dallas last night. A fourth straight loss, dropping them 2.5 games behind the Sixers for the top spot in the East. The Bucks now just a half game behind the Nets for second. Kevin Durant almost as confident, though, as James Harden.
Just know what we have to do on both ends of the floor at all times, and knowing the level of efficiency we got to have on both ends of the floor. You know, it's just the small things. I think that's usually the last part that takes you over the top is the small thing.
The Nets are 0-3 on this road trip. They play in Denver tomorrow night. The Clippers thumped the Lakers 118-94. No LeBron, and Anthony Davis only played 9 minutes with that ankle and or back issue. Davis says he'll play tonight in Portland. LeBron will not. The Warriors handle the Thunder 118-97, while Memphis was losing in Detroit 111-97. So Golden State takes a half game lead for the eighth spot. The Pacers cooled off the Hawks 133 123-126. And the Wizards fought off the Raptors 131-129 in OT. Toronto now four games out of the final playoff spot with five to go. On ice last night, the Oilers losing to Vancouver 6-3, but Connor McDavid had three assists, giving him 96 points in 52 games. And the Leafs beat the Canadiens 5-2. Auston Matthews, that's definitely his name, scored his league-leading 40th goal in just 49 games. And last but not least, Phil Mickelson still leads the Wells Fargo Championship, still at 7-under. He is even through 10 holes today, one shot better right now than Patrick Rogers. Bill, back to you.
Thank you, Bogus. Appreciate you, buddy. Oh, good old Phil. You got to root for lefties. I'd like him more if he was a short lefty, but whatever. Go Phil Mickelson. Let's do this. Let's talk about this Anthony Davis injury, certainly in the context of LeBron's continuing injury and what the reality of a potentially wide-open Western Conference actually looks like and who the favorites are next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome into the show, back into the show. Happy Friday. I love Fridays. I'm in a great mood. And I have the distinct pleasure, an hour and 19 minutes from now, of sticking around where I'm sitting for three extra hours, hanging out with Alvin DeLauro and Garrett Ritt over there, and doing a little Jim Rome radio, which is always a pleasure. Phone number on the program, for the program, for you, 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, SportsWriter, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Tom DiBenedetto, producer underscore Tom. Get to some Nets in a little bit. Bum of the week. Buy or sell. All an hour from now. Don't hate the Lakers. Not rooting against the Lakers. Not taking pleasure in the Lakers' travails. But there is something as a sports fan, as an NBA insider, that is really exhilarating about the consequences, really, of the injuries in LA. Because if the Lakers are not at full health, and maybe if you buy the notion that they won't be at full rhythm, I know a lot of people don't believe that, including the esteemed announcers on that Clippers-Lakers game last night, making the point, I understand it, that if you have LeBron healthy and Anthony Davis healthy, it doesn't matter about rhythm, you have LeBron James. That may be true. I'll just say, it was a long time ago, rhythm sure mattered to LeBron in Miami that first year. But I got it. They've already won a championship together, and while there's some new parts, they've been through the battles, and they've come out on top. I get it. But even in putting aside Anthony Davis's injury yesterday, which we're going to hit in a moment, LeBron's ankle, the fact that he came back too early, that he hasn't been playing, and that he's not going to play in what is a huge game tonight, the fact they could fall to the play-in, and even fall into the play-in, it feels really unlikely the Lakers wouldn't advance. Because the way that it, in a worst-case scenario, it's going to be, let me just walk through, here's the worst-case scenario. The Lakers fall to the play-in, and then they have to play the Golden State Warriors in that first 7-8 game. And that's not an easy game, but it's not an insurmountable game. I mean, if we're going to criticize the legitimacy of the Lakers' hopes because they fall to that spot when they're not healthy, but they get healthy for the game, you got to give even more doubt to a Warriors team that is as healthy as they're going to be this year, and they're also in that play-in game. But we've all seen this, right? Stephen Curry can go off for 60 points in the Lakers' faces, and the Lakers can then have to go and play another play-in game. That game would be against Memphis or San Antonio as it stands now. I have a lot of trouble believing they would lose both games. I think they could lose if they played in the play-in game to the Warriors. I do. I don't know that they will. It feels like a coin flip. But they're going to lose to the Warriors and to the winner of Memphis-San Antonio. That feels very, very, very unlikely. But it's not a situation the Lakers want to face. And we're talking about this, I'm talking about this in the context of that team being healthy. We don't know if LeBron's going to be healthy. And now we don't know if Anthony Davis is going to be healthy. And I've said this on this show, and I've said it before, not to be dire, not to be Chicken Little. It's not saying the sky is falling if you point out that history has a tendency to repeat itself and you point to a cycle. And here's a cycle. Anthony Davis has trouble staying healthy. Anthony Davis has missed 15 games in his career with back spasms. Anthony Davis hurt his ankle yesterday and left the game and told us afterward. You know what? I'll let Anthony Davis tell you. Here's Anthony Davis after a very important Lakers loss that did not feature because of this injury, Anthony Davis.
The ankle is fine. Tweaked it, but it wasn't bothering me. The back locked up pretty bad, so that's it. I couldn't really move. Feels a little better now, and we'll see how it is tomorrow. I should be good to go tomorrow based on how it's feeling now, but yeah, I mean, still wake up and test it out, but my plan is to go tomorrow.
Just let that sink in for just a second. Anthony Davis fell down and tweaked his ankle. His words, right? But that's fine. It's his back that locked up. This is what I'm talking about. The guy is a walking injury machine. And I'm not criticizing. It's just a fact. And I've been really worried about it. I've been thinking for the last almost 2 years now about the end of the Warriors dynasty and the end of their run. Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson get hurt. Big part of the reason the Raptors win that series. Kevin Durant coming off that loss. Maybe he would have left either way, but we'll never know. Leaves. Klay Thompson injured again, now going to miss a bunch of time. Steph, who played in that Raptors finals 2 years ago, has some injuries. Draymond Green, not the impact player he used to be. They're not 35 years old. They're not Chris Paul's age. There's a reason that they have had their career excellence shortened timeline-wise, and it's not age. It's the wear and tear of postseason basketball. They played again and again and again and again and again. In an era where we know, where we understand, where Adam Silver understands, where LeBron James understands, where every fan should understand because of this season, that playing multiple games again and again and again has a short and long-term impact on sustainability, it should be equally obvious, but we don't talk about it enough, that if you have postseason success, it's going to make it harder for you to stay durable. That's one of the marvels about LeBron. It's like the Dodgers winning the NL West. I can't even keep track. It's such an absurd number. I think it's 7 straight finals that he made. Then got hurt, in part because he made, I'm sure, 7 straight finals, and then came back and won an NBA championship. That's not normal. Even Steph and Klay and Draymond, and to a lesser extent, just in terms of time, Kevin Durant, trying to be healthy enough to win a couple of those championships is not normal. That's why they broke down. On the other end of the durability spectrum is Anthony Davis. He's never been durable. He's never been able to be healthy. And he had a really weird offseason last year. Somebody, I think it was on CBS Sports HQ, was like, yeah, but he got to sit out last summer. It's not the same thing. That's not, the pandemic wasn't off time. It wasn't emotional, psychological, and probably not physical rehabilitation because you had to keep yourself in game shape in case the season came back. If you kept yourself in game shape, it wasn't really time off. If you didn't, which a lot of guys didn't, when you came back, it was hard on your body. Anthony Davis played, like all the Lakers and all the members of the Miami Heat, into October of last year, got, what, 30 seconds off of an offseason and got back to it. The Lakers just may not be healthy. That's the reality. They may not be good enough to compete and win 16 playoff games because it's hard to believe that Anthony Davis and LeBron James are going to be healthy for 16 playoff games. They can't stay healthy for 6 regular season games they need to play in. So if that's the way it goes, it's a really, and I don't know, I understand why the Nets and the Lakers are the betting favorites in Vegas. I don't think it's a couple things. One, I think it's just an easy bet for the public, right? You're the public, bet on LeBron, bet on those three guys. I got it. But also, let's say that you want to fade those teams and you're a gambler. There's no comfortable second option. There's not a single second option that I can't tear down and tell you why it's going to fail. One of them will succeed, right? But it's hard to know which one. Let's go to the West. You're going to bet on the Clippers? They looked good last night. I've seen them look good. They looked good in the first 4 games against the Denver Nuggets last year. They got up 3-1. Then they pulled what we call in the business a Doc Rivers, and they lost the series. I don't think he likes me anymore. His agent doesn't call me back. But I used to know Paul George a little bit, spent a little time with him. I mean, socially is not true. At social events to write about him. But I liked him back when he was with the Pacers. But I'm not the one who named myself Playoff P without any playoff success and then continually turns into a freaking pumpkin in front of the entire world in those situations. Can he overcome that? Can he change that narrative? Of course he can. Is he going to? I don't know. I keep telling my wife I'm not going to drink for a month and lose weight. And we don't get there as often as we plan to. People say a lot of things. Executing them is different. I don't believe in the Clippers unless I believe absolutely in Paul George. So that's a big maybe. I really like Phoenix. I think Phoenix is really good. I think they're probably my favorite in the West if it's not the Lakers, but I understand the skepticism. All of those guys not named Chris Paul have basically not played in the playoffs. And that guy named Chris Paul has never had success in the postseason. He's never been successful in the playoffs. His person, and by the way, this is a fact. His personality, not his play, has always been what rubs his teammates the wrong way. The thing that infuriates me about him, the one thing he could control, how he treats other people on his team, is the thing he can't control, which is why he hasn't succeeded. But it feels like he's found the right spot for his ambition, his drive, his irascibility, whatever it is. But maybe I'm just falling into the same trap that everyone else fell into in the years before, because Chris Paul teams were always effective and always really good until the playoffs. That's a question mark. I really like Michael Porter Jr. I like the story of him trying to reclaim his excellence. He went to Missouri, but he's not, and he is, offensively, the output's been really good since Jamal Murray went down. But do I believe that Denver without Jamal Murray is going to win an NBA championship or even get out of the West? Again, not really. Not really. Dallas Mavericks are interesting, and I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they're deep enough. I don't think they're good enough on defense. I think Luka Doncic talking about how he needs to whine less is really smart. I'm at the 5 seed now, by the way. And let's say that the Portland Trailblazers get into that 6 spot, right? The Lakers fall to the play-in. It'd be probably, almost certainly, Portland, who's in the 5. I think Dame's amazing. I'm not betting on the Trailblazers to make. Maybe they could make a run to the conference finals again, one of those improbable runs, a product of Dame's excellence and some implosions by other teams along the way. I don't know who to tell you. I guess Utah's the one team I haven't mentioned. And maybe Donovan Mitchell's going to come back and be healthy. But even if Donovan Mitchell is 100%, which he's not and may not be, they're an interesting question mark. Most NBA prognosticators did not believe in that team. I kind of did, kind of being the key word. I mean, they're top 5 offense and top 5 defense. In fact, when Mitchell was playing, they were top 3 in both. And that is historically a recipe for a championship. If you like to gamble on sports, if you want to find some value in NBA championship odds, if you go back historically, and I've talked about this before, find teams that are in the top 10 in offensive and defensive rating, and then find teams, if there are some, there aren't every year, that are in the top 5. The last team to be in the top 5 in both was a team that I've said this, that I want to put money on, but I just said to myself 2 years ago, there's no scenario where the Toronto Raptors are going to win an NBA championship, Kawhi or no Kawhi. And they did. They got some luck along the way. So maybe Utah, but I'm not putting $1,000 or $100 of my own money on the Utah Jazz. I think that's why, and we could have the exact same conversation in the East, by the way. There's more compelling challengers in the East, teams like Milwaukee, teams like Philly, even teams, I think, like Boston, to push on this idea of the Nets being a sure thing, an early coronation. But I can tell you all the reasons all those teams can't succeed. And I don't think the Knicks or the Hawks are going to win 2 series. I think it'll really help if they play each other so one of them can obviously win a series. That's why the Nets and the Lakers are the betting favorites. There's no alternative. And that makes the NBA really interesting. Look, I'm high on the NBA. I cover it for a living when I'm not doing radio. I'm biased, probably, and I love the sport. But if the Lakers aren't a sure thing, and the Nets wobble in the first round, not even lose, right? Just wobble, they look vulnerable, and the NBA can't put up good numbers, then they've got a big problem. Because they have compelling stars, and it's a wide-open field if the Nets and the Lakers are not absolutely going to be in the NBA Finals. And I don't think they are. I think it's a long shot. All right, 855-212-4CBS. Let's have the same conversation on the other side of the equation. Brooklyn Nets got some problems, man. And James Harden, dude. Like, you know, I'm just going to play James Harden's comment. I'm going to let it sink in for like 5 seconds for you. And then together, we're going to talk about that dude's arrogance and how it could be a problem for the Nets next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, Bill Ryder with you. Let it breathe. Take in the Friday. Happy almost weekend. Thanks for hanging out. Appreciate you. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Twitter, sports writer, sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Hour left in this program, and over the course of that hour, we will talk in a moment, just a few moments here, about the Brooklyn Nets. What a question mark. What an interesting group of guys. We will do Bum of the Week, and in related news, one of those guys will be nominated. Want to come to the defense of Nikola Jokic, if we can. We'll do Buy or Sell with the executive producer, Tom DiBenedetto. And after that, I'll be sitting where I'm sitting. I'm at Jim Rome's beautiful operation here in Southern California. I'm looking at the talented Alvin DeLauro. I'm not looking at the mercurial Garrett Ridd. He's probably going and getting some hot chocolate. If you listen to the Jim Rome show, you get, I'd like to say that joke, but you get that fact. And over the course of the 3 hours with filling in for Jim, we'll have Jeff Zilgut on the program from USA Today. Frank Martin, who's the head coach at the University of South Carolina, and who, by the way, almost wasn't. And I'm really looking forward to this talk, because I'm going to talk to Frank about the uncertainty of not knowing if you're going to be fired, how you navigate that process, and how, as a coach, you convince the people in power and the people you're trying to recruit that you're one of the examples when patience is necessary and not one of the examples when a change is necessary, right? I would argue that Frank's history sort of tells that tale. Didn't get along with the AD at K-State, which is to say that AD was one of the worst athletic directors I've ever been around in the history of my time, and I've written that occasionally. One of my favorite moments was at a Final Four, me and him just on the escalator and doing the head nod and him just turning his back to me and me thinking, yeah, that's exactly what you did to your fan base by driving out Frank Martin. And what happened to Frank Martin? He went to South Carolina and made an NCAA championship game. Feels like the answer is self-evident. But anyway, we'll talk to Frank about that on the Jim Rome Show. Tom Haberstroh will be on the program, and we'll talk to Jerry Hairston Jr. And we'll get into a bunch of other stuff there. 855-212-4CBS. I've talked a lot here about the Brooklyn Nets and my doubt of the Brooklyn Nets. Tom said this earlier today. Thank you, Tom. That if and when the Nets don't win, if they flame out, all of these people are going to act like they were there all along. And I told Tom that is the story of my career. There's a lot of examples I can point to. But one of the most instructive moments of my career is when I was a radio host in LA, and I had a bad interaction with Chris Paul that I've talked about, but it was instructive. And Clippers, high-level people in the Clippers organization came out of the woodwork. People I didn't know to ask me to go get coffee, which was weird. I didn't really get along with the Clippers and still don't. And it was because they wanted to apologize, because Chris did this to the Clippers facility in front of everybody. He made a show of screaming at me and trying to bully me and the F word and, you know, not knowing me, how would he, that I love those situations. Like, let's go. This is great. This is amazing. I'll never forget the color draining from the face of the TV crew and like the producer, like just like, oh my God, because it was a lot of F word. It was a lot. And these sources and their apologies inadvertently told me Chris isn't a bad guy, but it's not you, it's him and none of the teammates. And just, I'm like, oh, he's a terrible teammate. Well, that's a whole different thing than being terrible to me. And it led to, I think I had like 27 sources. And I can't say who, but I had a great source in that organization who would only meet with me when the team was out of town and would schedule always meetings at Mexican restaurants. I don't know why Mexican restaurants, maybe because they're loud. The music was loud, far, people are drinking tequila and they won't remember, far away from the facility. And he would it was like deep throat. He would make us sit in the back and his back, it was just like we hiding. Like, I don't think anybody's going to come in here. And then I would see him at games and I have to act like I didn't know him. That's a whole thing. And I reported that Chris Paul was such a terribly toxic and demanding and perfectionist quote unquote leader that DeAndre Jordan basically was having emotional breakdowns and wanted to leave. And any of you that's ever worked for like a hard-charging, over-the-top, control freak, ambitious-driven boss who might be a good person in their personal life understands there's a distinction between being a good person to work with and a good father, husband, friend, right? People are complicated. The point, though, as it relates to this conversation and this Brooklyn Nets thing, is that people came out of the woodwork when I did that report in LA. Friends of mine, colleagues, I probably should name check them. Famous people at ESPN. Like, you basically name 10 of the most important NBA writers at ESPN. 4 or 5 of them went on the record and said, and I'm friends with these people, it's not true, it's never been true. Doc Rivers came out and said it's not true. The spineless, lying cowards who were part of that public relations department, some of whom are still there, leaked to the one of the radio stations here that was the home of the Clippers that it wasn't true. That's fine. Like, I expect the PR people to do that, but colleagues did it, And then when DeAndre Jordan pulled the I'm gone, you know, that whole Dallas hostage situation, right, where they like trapped him in his house, those exact same reporters, I'm thinking of one person in particular, wrote stories that said, we knew it all along. You knew it all along. 2 weeks ago, you said Ryder doesn't know what he's talking about. And the point is this. I'm right on this stuff sometimes, not because I know what other people don't. I just say what other people won't, because a lot of people in the business don't want to anger sources. The Nets are far from a sure thing. They don't get along with each other necessarily. And that level of talent's not a guarantee. It's not rocket science. I'm not some genius. The show is called Writer Than You because some bosses thought it would be funny, but it probably should be called More Honest Than the Other Guys. That's what this show really is. It's not writer than anybody. It's just more honest, more candid. Does that get me in trouble? Does that mean Chris Paul's going to scream and yell at me like some kind of freakish, angry UFC wannabe fighter? Yeah, that's going to be part of the deal. Am I going to have trouble getting my mail when a Clippers executive moves into my old house and won't forward it to me? Apparently. Unless we have a crazy misunderstanding, apparently that's what's going on. Is saying that once a week on the radio because it makes me laugh helping me get my mail? It certainly isn't. And we're probably not getting coffee, but I'll probably send him another email next week just to see if it can happen. But the things I say are true. And here's the truth. The Nets don't get it. They don't get it. And that's clear in two things we heard from two of their superstars yesterday. And before we play that, let me just say, the Nets have lost four games in a row. They lost a big game yesterday to Dallas. No one's talking about, but I'm going, Kyrie Irving, he scored 45. He's so good. He took 31 shots. I didn't watch every minute of the game, right? I had to tuck my kids in. I think I had to get a beer at one point. There was stuff going on in my life. So maybe I missed it, but I'm shocked he didn't just jack up a shot from half court, from like the half court line with 20 seconds left on the, maybe it happened. On the, boom, like just Harlem Globetrotter, this thing, right? Just, I'll do it from ball. Yeah. One over the shoulder. Who cares? And he was efficient. He was, I think, 17 to 31. But starters, not named Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, which is to say with my pretty amazing Einstein-like math skills, three guys who started a total of 19 points. That's not ball movement. That's not continuity. And those aren't the kind of lessons you want to learn, despite right here, Kevin Durant, and I kind of get it, trying to make a case everything is fine.
Glad it's happening now for us instead of in a couple of weeks, and hopefully we build off of this and keep growing, and I hope you feel this pain, I guess, from losing, feeling like we're not where we want to be. I like this position for us, and I think it's going to make us better as we continue to keep, you know, watching film, going through practice, going through shoot-arounds, and then playing a game.
I mean, I actually understand the general point that he's trying to make. There's something to be said about going through some difficulty and learning as a group to overcome it, but they're not a group. The key term being learning as a group how to overcome it. James Harden isn't playing yet. And here's the other thing. This has been true for LeBron James teams, for some Warriors teams, over the course of championship seasons in February, right? In January, in December, and then they rattle off a bunch of wins where there's still time to impact their destiny and have real momentum going to the postseason. That's not where you're at right now. I don't want to disrespect the Knicks or the Hawks, but there are a few reasons you want to try really hard to be that two seed. One is you just want home court advantage between the Nets and the Bucks against each other in the second round. But two, the three seed's probably going to play Boston in the first round. It could be the Heat. And I think the Heat is a similar story, by the way. But I really don't want to play the Celtics in the first round of the playoffs. They've got what neither Atlanta nor the Knicks have, and that's two players, who maybe three if you include Kemba Walker, who can go out and can get buckets and can create the kind of opportunities and moments that can win you series. And they're capable of great defense, and they're on a bit of a roll, even if they've underperformed over the course of the year. So Kevin Durant's logic doesn't hold because it's not the right time, and you got to get that two seed. But that's not even the biggest issue. There's an institutional arrogance that's become a part of the Nets culture. And normally, when you put on your wings and fly to the sun because nothing can burn you, those wings made of wax melt and you crash into the ground. And the latest purveyor of that tone-deaf cluelessness is the man with a marvelous beard. But I'm not sure an understanding of the actual talent level in the rest of the NBA, James Harden, who said this yesterday.
One of the things that a lot of teams don't have is talent, you know, so we don't have to worry about that aspect. You know, we can
control the rebounding and the screening. Like, we can watch film and get better at that. But skill wise, we're elite. So I'm not worried at all.
Everyone else sucks. We'll be fine. Is this on? Okay. Is this public? We'll be able to work on rebounding and screens. Oh, I didn't know that you were going to work on the screens. Okay, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. The Nets are champions. Can someone get Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn just 3 miles of it reserved for the parade? Should we do it tomorrow? Is there time? Maybe a couple weeks from now? One of the things, I mean, this sounds like something that I would sort of exaggerate as a make-believe scenario to accurately depict arrogance that isn't spoken out loud, but I don't have to because it's spoken out loud. One of the things that we have that other teams don't have is talent. One of the things you have that other teams don't have is talent. Okay, let me just go down the list here. The Philadelphia 76ers don't have talent. Is Joel Embiid no longer on the... Did I miss this? Oh, Embiid's still there? Got it. Okay, cool. That's good. That's great. How about Ben Simmons? He's still there? Yeah, he is. Nice. Oh, the Milwaukee Bucks don't have talent. Awesome. Awesome. So did I slip into an alternate universe where Giannis still hasn't learned to play and just he's not an MVP, not a starter? No, he's still, I'm in the right universe? Okay, great. Sounds good. Chris Middleton made an All-Star game, right? Is that and Drew Holiday is basically a top 20, 25 player who's playing well? Okay, cool, cool. Am I wrong or do one of my colleagues, Christian Julius Randle, is one of the great players in the history of the game, right? Julius Randle's still a member of the New York. It's a little joke there. Do the Atlanta Hawks have Trae Young? I don't think the Hawks are going to beat anybody, actually. Maybe the Knicks. But come on. The Boston Celtics no longer have... Did Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, and or Jaylen Brown retire? Did I miss this? I mean, I shouldn't say shut up, but shut up. Bam is not playing Jimmy Butler? By the way, he said the league. He said teams. He didn't say the Eastern Conference. Did Rudy Gobert stop playing? Is Nikola Jokic no longer a part of the NBA? Is Luka Doncic not around? Did Kawhi Leonard get hurt again and I missed it? Is Paul George still? All right, Paul George, I'll give you. Anthony Davis and LeBron are still kind of in the league, right? Is Chris Paul still out there? I mean, yeah, you have elite talent. Don't worry, we're the only talented team in the NBA and we're going to work on screens. We're going to work on screens. So that's, you know, that's going to be, we've got set plays that we're going to do. And that, you know, there's this thing called, no, you guys are idiots. It's Kyrie, you're pawns. But rebounding is where the ball comes off the rim and you grab it. And coach told me if I use both hands, I might be able to, you know, get a rebound. So that, you know, I feel like we're good. What are you talking about? Yeah, the Nets are going to, this is the thing. This is why I can't root for these guys. They don't deserve, I know. Clint Eastwood, right? Clint Eastwood, brooding music, Western, it's raining. It's like, why does it rain so much? Deserves got nothing to do with it. I know deserve has nothing to do with it, but these guys do not deserve an NBA championship. Oh my God, am I going to have to root for Chris Paul against the Brooklyn Nets and the NBA? Is that what my life is going to be? That'll basically be Eastwood standing over me growling, deserves got nothing to do with it. You're right, Chris Paul. These guys, what we have that other teams don't have is talent. We're the bad guys. We in the media are the bad guys. We're the ones that they take things out of context and twist our words and lie. No, man, not anymore. I mean, I never did that, but like whoever did doesn't have to. They just push play on your words. Kyrie's calling people pawns. Kevin Durant's list of insults is long and complicated. I'm not even mad at KD. I don't think he's right. All right, you're trying to rally the troops. James Harden, who's out injured, and here's the other thing. Okay, you're the only talented team in the NBA. Cool, man. Do you think maybe? And I'm just gonna put it out there as a crazy talk radio talk show host. I'm just gonna give you a hot take here. Here's a hot take. Writer of the hot take. Do you think it's just remotely possible that talent doesn't matter as much if it turns into a turd in the playoffs in big moments? Is there just a chance that when that talent just evaporates out of the utter inability to execute in big moments. Is there any chance, James, that maybe that, I don't know. I'm spitballing here on a Friday. You think maybe there's an impact? You know, do you think maybe going 1-for-11 in a fourth quarter from the three-point line, if you're a star player, negates some of the talent? I'm just thinking out loud. Do you think it's possible that when that talent in a half-court offense in a critical moment with playoff legacies on the line literally tries – you know that you can't hide behind things that aren't there, right? You understand that there's no imaginary friends and there's no imaginary boulders with which you're standing behind in a half-court situation. What is this guy talking about? We're the only talented team – did I miss part of the clip? Is it we're the only talented team in the NBA who's got a talented guy who turns into a turd when the moment? Did I miss that part of the? It feels like we played the whole clip. I like James Harden. I know it doesn't sound like it. I like James Harden. I actually like James Harden. I kind of like KD. And I don't like Kyrie at all because he called us all a bunch of pawns. Like has nothing to do with it. Deserve has nothing to do with it. But these guys are trying really hard to disprove the rule that deserve has nothing to do with it. If you push the limits of anything, you're going to break those limits. And these guys are acting so tone deaf and so clueless and so arrogant. Feels like there's a reckoning coming. I don't know if it's for the league or for them, but it's going to be fun to watch. 855-212-4CBS. Let me do this. I was going to push back on a national talking guy who Nikola Jokic will be the worst MVP of all time. But I'm also now just going to include James Harden in this. James Harden, who thinks there's only one talented team in the NBA. Let me just pick one guy, Nikola Jokic, and explain why he actually is, you know, this crazy thing called talented. Got to break the internet. The internet's next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, what's up? Happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you. Appreciate you listening to the show. Well aware, you have a lot of choices, a lot of ways you can spend your time. Like Andrew Bogus, you can just watch every Marvel movie without a break. There's lots of things in the world, and we appreciate you being here on CBS Sports Radio with your incredible affiliate. Maybe you're listening to Odyssey.com. However, wherever, thank you. We appreciate you letting us come into your world and hang out with you a little bit. We'll get to Bum of the Week here in a minute. We're going to do a little balance, a little yin, a little yang, right? We'll get to those bums of sports, but let's first celebrate someone who's going to be honored with an MVP in the NBA whenever it's said and done. NBA votes are due, and I'm a voter this year, as I've mentioned. Just found out a few days ago. Voting is due, I think it's a couple weeks from now, week and a half, 2 weeks. They give you a little time after the end of the regular season. Sometimes it comes down to the end of the regular season, and it may in some of these awards for some of the spots. All right, Phoenix finishes atop the Western Conference. I think it's really hard not for Chris Paul to be on the ballot and or Monty Williams to be coach of the year. And there's a lot of sort of situations like that. But Nikola Jokic is going to be the most valuable player. And what's interesting is no one's talked about this. He might be unanimous. Maybe he won't be because there's always some knucklehead out there. But he has a chance to be a unanimous MVP, which is a very rare thing indeed. And one of the talking points that people have been clinging to is he'll be the worst MVP maybe ever in a generation, in the modern era. And on the face of it, right, if you don't follow the sport, I could see where that would track.
This guy is the worst. Yeah.
But the people that are saying that should know better, in at least one case do know better and are saying it anyway. And I'm just going to come to Jokic's defense. And this is not, by the way, an MVP argument, right? An MVP, most valuable player, is a single season award. It's based on the regular season. It's not a career award. But the point people are making is historically, just as a player, historically, this guy will be one of the worst. I don't know Andy Bailey from Bleacher Report. I just know that he's smart because I'm just going to read you his research and his information. And I didn't know these things. Here is Nikola Jokic's career ranks. This is where he stands all time in the history of the NBA. Box score plus minus, which I think is a pretty interesting, it's like player efficiency rating, but weighted more toward defense. It's not perfect, but it's certainly very indicative of excellence. In the history of the NBA, the person with the best career box plus minus is this guy named Michael Jordan. You probably have heard of him. He had a nice little career. The second best statistical player in the history of the NBA, according to box score plus minus, is a guy named LeBron James. By the way, so far it kind of feels like it's a pretty good stat, right? See, it feels like it sort of indicates excellence. The third guy is Nikola Jokic. I could probably just stop there, to be honest. I'm not going to. I mentioned player efficiency rating. John Hollinger came up with this stat. It is weighted much more heavily toward offense than defense, but it's a really interesting stat. I'm not going to say one of the talking heads who are seeking the attention that people seek in this business, but the person who, one of the people leading this cry against Jokic as undeserving historically, is a huge fan of player efficiency rating, which makes sense because this guy's smart and PER is important. In the history of the sport, Nikola Jokic has the 7th highest player efficiency rating. Let that sink in, top 10. Win share per 48 minutes, which is a stat that I really like. It basically is the impact that you have on your team's actually winning games if every player, if their excellence would stretch over 48 minutes per game, right? 8th in the history of the NBA. No one in NBA history matches Jokic's career marks of 22, almost 23 points per game, 12 rebounds, and 7.5 assists per 75 possessions. So when he's actually involved, right, when he gets the ball, he's 23, 12, 7.5. Here's some breaking news. Now that they figured how good the guy is, I would imagine he's going to hit that number of possessions on a regular basis, which means his stats are going to get pretty good. And he's not 35, so he might get better. And just this year, right? So just this year, going back to this. So here's the thing. If we were making a case for someone that had never won an MVP, right? For someone that has never gotten the award. Let's say I actually think Chris Paul deserves a vote, but Chris Paul's never been an MVP. And everyone's rolling out the historical conversation. Be like, all right, it doesn't really apply. Right? But it's the inverse, right? It's the tail wagging the dog here. He's the worst MVP in history if he gets it. No, he's not. And you couple that with the fact that just this year, like this year's worthiness, no one's even close. No one's played enough games. He's been dominant. He's been amazing. And here's just one stat that proves the point. In this season, 2020-21, his box score plus minus is 11.73. That is the 8th best single season mark ever. And what's amazing about it, it's unlike the other stats I gave you, which are amazing. You know, if your player efficiency rating, box score plus minus over career, win share per 48, is the totality of your career. So Michael Jordan can't appear on that list twice, right? But in a single season stat where you're 8th, you're competing against every Michael Jordan season ever, every LeBron James season ever, every Wilt Chamberlain season ever, every Steph Curry season ever, every Kevin Durant season ever. The guy's having an amazing year. And I just want to thank the people seeking this attention and trying to act like they are smart. They're just trying to puff themselves up for just helping people like Andy Bailey to bring even more information to people like me to make me realize I don't have to pretend to pause in voting for Nikola Jokic. Congratulations, Jokic. You're number one on my ballot. It's not even a question. Appreciate you. That's the good stuff. Time for the bad stuff. Let's do Bum of the Week.
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
They're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum. I'm a bum. I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, it's a short but sweet list. It's just Andrew Bogut nominated. No, I'm just kidding. Andrew's not nominated at all. I just wanted him to give me the look that he just gave me, like, what is this guy talking about? A few names. That's actually hard. Tony La Russa is certainly nominated for Bum of the Week. It feels imperative to know the rules of baseball if your job is to manage a Major League Baseball team. And La Russa certainly botched this situation the other day when he didn't understand the particulars of the new extra inning rule and the fact that, yes, the guy that made the last out or his spot in the lineup is the guy that goes to second base in extra innings, but no, if it's a pitcher, it's part of a double switch or any other scenario, doesn't have to. You can go to the guy before that. And it literally cost the White Sox a win, literally. Harden is nominated. We just got done talking about Harden's, feel bad is not the right term. I don't want to be redundant or reductive. Like every time it's James Harden, I actually like Harden, but I'm not the one who's going in front of a podium and saying we're basically the only team in the NBA that we have this thing no one else has. It's called talent. I mean, what a remarkably silly thing to say. And let's get Jimbo Fisher on the list. We didn't play this today, but Jimbo, maybe we'll play on the Jim Rome show. Probably not. Jimbo Fisher said, I think at a booster event, that they're going to kick Nick Saban's ass. I think kick his ass was the expression. What are you, my 8-year-old? And Henry loves that expression, trying to like get him to stop, even though it makes me smile. And Nick Saban was asked about it, and he and Jimbo and Saban are really good friends. So this is like fun banter. Saban goes, in golf. It was absolutely amazing. Jimbo, you're nominated. And that's it. We've just got three. It's really hard. I'm going to let Tom do a little thumbs up, thumbs down here. Tom, do you want to vote Harden versus LaRusso? Are you voting for LaRusso on a thumbs up, or are you going to do thumbs down? You think it's really tough, right? Because Harden's thing, but yeah. Tony LaRusso. Part of the thing about LaRusso is that he always acted like he was smarter than everyone else. He lorded his supposed intellect and his intellectual superiority over everybody. When you act like that, when you come for people and you're in a position of power and you bully reporters and other people, and frankly, players, you're going to get got when you get yourself in these situations. Tony LaRusso, the guy that doesn't know the rules of baseball, who manages a Major League Baseball team, congratulations, bro. You're the bum of the week.
That's your bum of the week.
I detest you!
On Lighter Than You.
Someone that would never be bum of the week, ever, and would never be nominated because he's amazing, is Andrew Bogish. And that Andrew Bogish is now, at some point, going to give us an update, but not at this exact moment, I'm being told, because hashtag Friday technical difficulties. And there's a lot, I understand there's a lot going on. I can see Bogish on Skype and a giant, I don't know if it's a number 5 or a giant number 7, just flashed in the window, but apparently there's a massive party. It's either a birthday party happening at the Bogish household or else he's got a Marvel party going on. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number here on the program. We'll get to buy or sell in just a minute. Just waiting to get a little word on whether Mr. Bogus, he might be watching Infinity War. And to be fair, I mean, that's really important. Let's do this. Let's just skip to buy or sell since we're going to run out of time. I feel bad. It's not nice of me, but Bogus will understand. I love buy or sell. And we're going to hit that next here on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, what's up, Bill?
I was so excited. I just jumped all over it. I was just like so ready for Buy or Sell. I mean, I'm in. Let's go.
Well, it's funny. You've flown once in the last year. I've apparently flown each of the last 2 days. I'm joining you from another airplane. So.
Yeah. So did you find out when you landed in London that the Champions League finals, both in Istanbul and not until the end of the month?
Yeah, I badly miscalculated the entire thing. So I just booked a new flight for, you know, the next morning, which is this morning. And that's why I am again in the air and having to speak with you via phone.
We're not just colleagues, we're friends. And so I'm not going to put you on the spot and have you answer on the record whether or not you are on Christian Pulisic's personal private jet, and that is how you're able to just technology-wise and social graces of flying, able to produce the show from over the Atlantic. I'll just say, well played, sir.
I appreciate that. I can confirm that it is not Christian's private jet, but I will take the compliment. Okay, Shohei Ohtani's towering third inning home run last night gave him 10 for the year and made a little history in the process. There have now been 4 seasons in the history of Major League Baseball with 10 home runs as a batter and 30 strikeouts at least as a pitcher. Those go to Babe Ruth in 1918 and 1919 and Shohei Ohtani in 2018 and 2021. Unfortunately, the Angels did not win the game again, just like the night before when Shohei provided 5 one-hit innings to start the game. Buy or sell, Bill, that Shohei Ohtani will need to leave the painful Angels to have a truly legitimate impact and get the baseball relevance that he deserves.
Oh, my God. How is Shohei Ohtani and how is it that he and Mike Trout are in this same MLB purgatory? What I don't know, Tom, and I should answer your question properly, and I apologize. I will get the answer over the weekend. I don't know how the Angels farm system projects pitching-wise, I think, in particular, over the next 2 or 3 years. I'm certainly not aware of any high level of excellence. That doesn't mean it's not there. I can't pretend to be an expert on the rookie ball and single-A prospects of every Major League Baseball team. I don't really buy this, but I'm going to sell your question because I don't want it to be true. Because he's going to be there. He's going to be an Angel. He wants to be on the West Coast. It seems unfair that he would force his way or eventually go to the Dodgers. Mike Trout's under contract. I don't have it in front of me, but I think literally forever. I think it's an infinity contract. And I wanted, even before Shohei's remarkable arrival, return from injury, and what you just walked us through. He's so good. Even if, hello, Adam Klug, my former producer Adam Klug will not stop texting me every... I'm not kidding. If Shohei Ohtani, like, ordered an In-N-Out burger he liked, I would get a text message from Klug about how, like, great show... Because Klug drafted Shohei Ohtani. I get it, Adam. You're good at fantasy baseball. Like, that's the only... But other than that, I'm all in for every part of Shohei Ohtani. And he and Mike Trout together, they're too talented, they're too important to baseball for baseball to squander this. I know baseball squanders everything, but I'm not willing to be that negative on a Friday.
All right, well, sticking with that very painful team, future first ballot Hall of Famer Albert Pujols, as you've mentioned this morning, was released by the Angels yesterday, ending his tenure in the final season of a 10-year, $240 million contract signed back in 2011. According to CBS Sports, some likely potential landing spots include the White Sox, the Yankees, the Indians, the Reds, and the Cardinals. Pujols has argued that his exit velocity numbers indicate he can still contribute to a team, and he is still pursuing the 700 home run mark, although he currently only has 667. Buy or sell Albert Pujols is still worth taking a chance on for one of those five teams.
So we talked earlier in the show about his excellence and about you can't remember the ugly end, and you won't remember the ugly end when you look back, as Tom Verducci very beautifully wrote, the sweetness of a career. That is true. It's also true that the ugly end is the ugly end when it's ugly, and it's ugly for Albert Pujols. He is not worth the time or investment. If he wanted to go to a team, be a pinch hitter, be a presence in a clubhouse, if there was a contender that believed that presence, not that bat, that presence was worthwhile, that would be a different story. I don't think that's his goal, and as we all know, depth in Major League Baseball matters. You don't bring guys in who can't play, so I'm going to sell if there's any value for teams, unfortunately.
All right, well, Giancarlo Stanton is on an absolute tear, finally smashing another home run yesterday to continue his 12-game hitting streak. Over that span, he has launched six bombs. He's batting .510, and he has hit 12 separate baseballs harder than 115 miles an hour. The rest of the league combined has seven such hits over that same period. Buy or sell, Giancarlo Stanton has finally officially turned a corner as a New York Yankee.
100% buy.
Buy.
I mean, the guy's a former MVP. He's obviously a precociously talented hitter, and it was inevitable that he was going to find his way. The pressure of the decision he made to go where he went, to say nothing of playing for the Yankees. And Tom, you're in New York City. You know what this is. It's one of the great things. One of the things I love about New York City, and I didn't realize the extent to which it's rare, is that, and this isn't true across the entire media landscape, but certainly the writers will be hard on you. Like, they're not going to be your best friend. Fans will turn on you. There isn't this culture of sycophancy that absolutely exists in L.A., that absolutely exists in Miami. It didn't always exist in Chicago, but I think Jordan's stranglehold over the imagination and just the sport and the culture changed that. New York's one of the few places where they call it like they see it. That's not easy to navigate when you're successful, you know, when you're amazing, let alone when you struggle. Yeah, I think he's gotten there. I think the dude's a human being. But we know that baseball and all sports are largely psychological. And once you get over whatever hump is in your brain, whatever hurdle you've thrown up for yourself, if you're that talented, sky's the limit. I think this bodes very well for him and that Yankees organization.
And the perfect example, the point you just made, over this 12-game hitting streak, he started by getting booed every single at-bat at Yankee Stadium. It's ending 12 days later with MVP chants.
Yankee, I mean... I know there are people who would say that makes Yankees fans the worst. It actually, in some ways, makes them among the best. What is wrong with having standards? Like, what is wrong with having expectations? One of the things that shocked me when I went down to cover the Miami Heat, and frankly, one of the only reasons I'm talking into this microphone, I mean, I feel like I've had some success because there's a little bit of talent there, but it's a lot of luck and good fortune, and some of that luck and good fortune is competing against people who are terrified of making the people they cover angry. And or just in full, there's an AP writer down there who I'm not sure that he started a fan club for the people that he covers, but if you told me that he did, I don't think he has, but if you said that it happened, it wouldn't surprise me. And I didn't, that's not the bat, I came from a politics background and a hard news background, and I just assumed whether you work for the Associated Press or I think his name's Tom or something, I don't know, or someone else, that you are, you know, going to be hard on people when the situation calls for it. You cannot cover a sport or anything for multiple days and not have something happen that requires criticism. But that would be news to most places. That's not news to New York City, which makes it, for many reasons, one of the most dynamic places to write about and talk about sports in the world.
All right, so this next one might come as alarming news for you, Bill. I hope it doesn't. But the Bears are apparently exploring leaving Soldier Field. Chicago is apparently interested in a patch of land in Arlington Heights, which is about 30 miles outside of the city, as a potential building site for a new stadium. This information was provided by the mayor of Arlington Heights himself in an interview last week, but the Bears have not denied it. They do have a lease at Soldier Field through 2033. Buy or sell, Bill, the Bears are actually in need of a new stadium.
I'm going to sell. I'm just going to sell because you're really going to play a significant role in destroying the architectural and historical beauty of Soldier Field. You're going to further debase it with your football play, and then you're just going to be like, I'm out for the former racetrack where I've actually been. Oh my, it's the most Bears thing I've. Are they going to name it the Jay Cutler Stadium of Excellence? And then I'm going to literally like puke on my shoes when I get the news, just walking down the street when the alert from CBS Sports comes. I hate my Bears. I hate them so. No, can't leave Soldier Field.
It's going to be called Nagy Field at Pace Stadium.
Yeah,
why don't we just
call it QB1, and we'll just rotate a bunch of rant when they ruin Justin Fields' career or they trade him away. It'll be amazing.
No, don't do that.
I just thought of this: the Bears pull off a trade for Aaron Rodgers. They trade Justin Fields like 4 first-round picks, and it turns out this whole thing was a long game to destroy the Bears for 10 years because Rodgers had made the decision in concert with the Packers to retire amicably, and this was just like his exit present to Packers fans. And just pulls a retire is the only player in the history of the sport to do his retirement announcement for a team with the team's rival. Like the trade goes through, and then he just goes up to the Packers podium and goes, "I'm retired. You're welcome."
You're damaged. I know why you're damaged. But you are damaged.
I am damaged. I'm damaged goods, Jared, baby.
Goff. speaking of damaged fan bases, by the way, New Lions quarterback Jared Goff met with the media yesterday for the first time since the draft and shared his general sense of optimism that the team did not take a first-round quarterback. Here's the quote. "I think it's a nice vote of confidence, obviously, for me. I think what's not lost on me is their first move as a staff, both GM and head coach, involved me. It's exciting. It makes you feel good," end quote. Buy or sell, the Lions' decision not to draft Justin Fields or Mac Jones with the 7th overall pick actually does indicate legitimate long-term confidence in Goff.
Yeah, I'll buy it, or at least I'll buy it. Yes, buy. It's a buy. And it's a buy on the same level as the Panthers with Sam Darnold. I think they've made a calculated decision that they got a quarterback that can be sufficiently good enough for value and they can put their resources somewhere else, right? Neither Jared Goff nor Sam Darnold are going to become Patrick Mahomes, and that isn't the goal, but if they can become Baker Mayfield, right? You surround him with a really good roster and you play effective football, they probably feel like they can be a contender. So yes, I could be wrong, but I understand the approach, and at least in this moment, they've got a lot more decisions to make that need to be correct for it not to look brutal in the years ahead. But if they make those right decisions, big if, I think it can be a very effective strategy.
So as you discussed an hour ago, the Lakers are still in desperation mode, and they try to stay the West number 6 seed tonight after a blowout at the hands of the Clippers last night. That also saw Anthony Davis pick up an injury that we discussed, although he plans to play tonight. This is a huge game against the Blazers. LeBron is also expected to be unavailable once again. The Blazers badly need the game, too. They actually have the identical 37-29 record as the Lakers right now, so they're trying to do the exact same thing and get into those top 6 seeds. And they have won 5 of their last 6 games. They are favored tonight by 8 points. Buy or sell, Bill, as the Lakers get blown out again tonight.
Blown out. Yeah, I'm going to buy that.
Bye.
I'm not confident Anthony Davis is going to play because it was a very, we'll see. And I just saw LeBron James come back when he shouldn't have and hurt himself. I think there's a real concern about Anthony Davis, understandably, and he's trying to gut it out, and I respect that, and the guy wants to be there for his team. And you don't want to fall to the play-in. You also don't want to play in the 6th seed and not have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It's not dire, but it's certainly precarious for the Lakers.
All right, we'll end with some baseball. The Padres and Giants will clash again for the 2nd straight weekend as San Diego continues their hellacious run of NL West weekend series to start the season. After losing that first epic series to the Dodgers, the Pods have now bounced back to beat the Dodgers the following weekend, and the weekend after that, last weekend, they beat the Giants 2 out of 3 games. Buy or sell, the Padres will win another series from the Giants in San Francisco this weekend.
Yeah, I hate making predictions on baseball series because it's such a long season, but I'm going to buy.
Buy!
I think the Giants are pretty good, but the reality is the Padres are potentially great, and I think they are going to be in the mix in that NL West division, and I think the Dodgers are going to win a ton of games. I'm not, and we talked about this on this show and on the Jim Rome show yesterday, I almost said last week, yesterday. It's a long season. Dodgers are going to be fine. All the metrics, you look at their roster, even with Dustin May, and it's a bummer getting injured, the Dodgers are incredibly dangerous and remarkably formidable, and they are still going to have a ton of W's next to their name, and, because both can be true, they're a handful as it relates to the San Diego Padres. Thank you to Andrew Bogish. In fact, we'll see Bogish on the Jim Rome Show in a minute, but if you're not sticking around, you should. JimRome.com, Odyssey.com, your wonderful affiliate, hopefully. I'll be filling in for Jim for the next 3 hours. Andrew Bogish will be there, I think, for the first hour, but appreciate his work, as always, on this show. Thank you to Tom DiBenedetto, producer underscore Tom, who can now get back to his caviar and his champagne on the very fancy Austin Powers styled, I can see it on Skype, private jet with which he is flying back from London, but was kind enough to still help produce the program while sailing over the Atlantic. And I'm not done. It's my Friday. I hope it's your weekend already, but I got 3 more hours to go filling in for the guy who has had as big a positive impact on my career as anybody, and that's Jim Rome. And it's always an absolute honor and a remarkable pleasure and incredibly surreal to fill in. That's even before the Garrett Ridd experience. So filling in for Jim Rome for the next 3 hours. Stick around, JimRome.com, Odyssey.com. Check it out. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back on this show on Monday from New York City and on Jim Rome coming up in mere moments here on CBS Sports Radio.